Net Podcast. Third Degree Net Podcast.
Third Degree the Podcast is brought to you by Wigglebutt Soccer Club. That's right, for over 100 years, Wigglebutt SC has brought you the same brand of chaotic and joyful soccer, exemplified by 11 corgis kicking a ball around on a pitch. Wigglebutt SC, for all your merchandise needs, check out the Kick Around shop at Fourth Wall. Get yourself some Wigglebutt SC swag. Wigglebutt SC, the friendliest club in the world.
Well, hello there, DFW area soccer curious you. Welcome to another episode of Third Degree, the podcast. He is here, bright and shiny, filled with vim and vigor. It is Dan Crook.
Filled with what now?
Vim and vigor.
Right you are then.
Okay. And your hero, my hero, everybody's hero, editor, founder, Third Degree, the podcast, and the original soccer influencer himself, Buzz Carrick. Come in, Buzz.
Hey, fellas. Dan, I thought you'd be a little more hyped to have discovered this week that there's some Luton, Texas fans out there on the interweb that I shared with you. Yeah?
Oh, wow. We exist. There's a few Lutonians in Texas.
You're not the only Lutonian in the Dallas-Fort Worth area?
No, there's actually a guy that lives like maybe 15 minutes from me.
That's crazy.
They breed like rats.
But you didn't. Now, it's not like a guy you actually knew when you lived... Buzz, it's not somebody you knew back in Luton.
No.
Oh, okay. All right.
No, that would be weird.
That would be weird for sure. All right. Well, very good. Well, we got lots to do today. We've got while Dallas themselves were off, there were other results for local teams that we can plow through. I have a theory I would like to present to the crew, and maybe if everybody is up for it, some wiggle butt news.
Peter, before we go, shout out to Kenny Cooper, who stopped by at the USA game and talked to you and I and said hello. We were like, oh, look, it's Kenny. And he came over and chatted with us a bit. Always a pleasure. Great guy.
I just want to say, I really like watching soccer games in person with Buzz. You know why?
Why is that?
Because he doesn't talk, he doesn't hassle me, and he just watches the game and tweets a lot.
I don't tweet as much as I used to. I used to tweet a lot, but then now I just sort of try and focus more on the game even.
And I was bummed, Dan, you didn't come down and join us for a while.
Well, you know, it's a long way up in the press box from there.
Dan was working.
Oh, who are you working for? Were you working for Third or are you working for another outlet? I don't know. I'm asking.
Should read the blog.
There on the front page.
Good point. Yeah.
Yeah.
Probably would make sense for the guy on the podcast to read the blog, wouldn't it?
Yeah. You'd be the only one.
Duly noted. Okay. Well, Dallas did not play this weekend, but it probably feels like a good time for us to bring up a couple of points to talk about as they do play San Diego on Wednesday and then San Jose on Saturday. Which one's here? Which one? Oh, San Diego's here. San Jose's on the road, correct?
They're both here.
Oh, they're both here. Okay. Sorry. Good Lord. Don't yell at me.
Sorry. I just get excited that there was two home games because you know how good they are at home. So I'm hyped for that.
Well, yeah. That's your favorite thing in the whole world. Watch them play at home.
Craziest thing in the whole world.
The thing that is kind of looming out there that is of interest is the fact that show the midfielder extraordinaire. So show's loan is coming up fast and furious. Are we all just working under the assumption that he's adios amigo?
I mean, I think so. You know, the price is high enough, you know, for the amount of production you're getting on him. But I think you might as well go in a different direction. You've also added since he joined, which was, you know, effectively in a lot of ways, just sort of a Paxton Pomykal emergency replacement. The fact that his contract was, you know, ran June to June sort of just tells you that that's true. And you've added, you know, Ramiro and Kaik and Legette back. And, you know, there's just Diego Garcia is coming along. There's just no need really anymore. You know, Paxton Pomykal was getting minutes as worried as we are. You know, I just don't even need to carry him anymore. So, like, certainly, like, what it would cost probably to buy him and what it would cost to pay him to stay is not worth the production you're going to get from him. And given the way this team plays, you probably don't really have a spot for him in the starting lineup. So it just doesn't make any sense. Even if you love the guy, business-wise, it doesn't make any sense to me to keep him.
All right, but let me throw in a weird twist.
Okay.
I don't think it's unfair for us to say that our DEFCON level on Paxton Pomykal is rising.
Yeah.
And then, I mean, maybe that'll all work out this week. Maybe Paxton's in the 18 and gets the sub in this week, and we're back to DEFCON. Wait, what's the lowest for? Is it DEFCON 5 or 1? I always forget. Where does DEFCON roll? Do we know?
I don't remember. I think 1 is the top, but I'm okay. Not sure.
Let's just roll with the idea that 1 is like we're that's probably an inappropriate time to talk about nuclear bombs. But you know what I'm talking about. On Paxton, we're all calm, okay? So we're all back to Paxton's great. But if he's not, let's say he was not, let's talk about show's value at that point.
Well, you know, if you lose, if Paxton's gone and not available to be playing, you know, I don't think it changes very much. He's played like 30 minutes. So, you know, it just means that Diego Garcia might get a few minutes, or that Siki and Sebling might get a few more minutes. It doesn't really change anything.
Okay.
You know, the problem with Paxton, of course, is the $1 million salary, which they'll have to, if he can't play, then they're going to have to deal with that. But
have they used their buyout this season?
Yeah.
No.
They used it at the beginning of the season.
That's right.
I think with Paxton, I don't think show necessarily, you know, gives you enough that it's like, I think the international spot and the senior roster spot and the needs you have in other positions would take a precedence over what you're going to get for show, even if Paxton is done. You know, I'm not saying he is. I'm just saying, right, like, you know, there's sometimes, right, we have some worries, and that's the whole point. You know, and if Legette's back, you know, Delgado's proving that he can really bring something in that position, even though we found out later on that he was a 10. He's really looking pretty positive as an 8. Pedrinho has shown up and does some good things in that position. You know, I just don't think that's like 5 players we've listed since they hired Show in the first place. And I honestly don't think that what we've seen from Show this spring doesn't match as what he did last year in terms of his ability. And like, there seems to be some real physical hangups at this point, you know, perhaps related to whatever it was that made him out for so long. So I think that this doesn't make any sense to keep him in a current state of affairs.
Okay.
Which is weird, because the end of last season, I would have said, oh, yeah, that's a nice looking piece. Yeah, keep that guy. But right, 6 months later, nope.
Counterpoint, Dan, by chance?
Nah, just get rid of him. Okay. We've been talking about needs for the roster. You need salary space. You need a national spot. You need, you know, all of the things that he occupies.
Well, I guess going into these games, assuming he leaves, and with the transfer window opening, what is it, 6 weeks away at this point, middle of July?
I believe it's July 27th, but, you know, his contract runs out June 30th. So,
right,
like, there's a misalignment there, you know, so like, you'd have to execute the buy right now, and I just don't think it's worth it, you know, and so you'll be short a guy for a little bit, but you know he could theoretically be around this week with these 2 games, because he went away for an international, and so he theoretically could be back. He had a game, like, I think it was Friday was his last game, but at the same time, like, do you bother to bring him into town for 7 more days and 2 more games? I don't know. It depends on how you feel about your midfield. It depends on how, like, as far as we know, the only problem, like, Ramiro's hurt, right? But Kaique is back. Paxton probably still has a little bit of a knee swelling or whatever from that knee bruise or whatever. And really, that's it. You got everybody else. Brino's fine. Legette's fine. You know, plenty of bodies. So,
assuming they do move on from him at some point in a future episode, we'll have to have a conversation about the significance or lack thereof of his signing last season, when they made it, what his impact he did or didn't have, the cost, you know, what it came at the expense of, those kind of things, to just kind of make a judgment as to whether or not that was a good or a bad signing or loan at the time. So we could do that some other day.
And as you pointed out, we have a month till the window. So, like, there's going to be plenty of times to talk about, like, what they should do in the window as we go forward, because they can't really, unless somebody's a free agent. Like, if there's a guy who's out there right now as a free agent, like, this week when show leaves, like, if there's a dude sitting at home, like, I mean, I'm not saying this is happening, but, like, for example, Yaramendi, you could actually sign him.
Yeah.
And like tomorrow, if you want it, or not tomorrow, next Monday.
Well, the good news is they play these two games back to back, or essentially back to back, at home. And so they play Wednesday, San Diego, a team they lost last to 5-0.
Yeah.
And Saturday against San Jose. What was the San Jose result? I have totally forgotten what the San Jose result was. But those games now have two full days in between them. Buzz, what are we looking at in terms of lineups, or what do you think Quill's plans are?
Well, you know, his team just had a pretty decent break, a week and a half without a game. You know, they had a little time off. And then after the game on Saturday, they don't play again until the next weekend. It's a Friday game for Independence Day, but, you know, again, plenty of time to recover. So I don't think you really need to rotate much on these two games. You might want to a little bit, but you don't need too much because of the fact they're going to get rest. They got rest in front, and they have plenty of time to recover afterwards. It's not like back-to-back midweek games or anything. So, you know, I you convinced me a little bit last time that the theory that the coach should continue with who won the game. And so maybe you're right that Alvaro gets to go again. I'm a little bit worried about that because, you know, San Jose and with Bruce Arena is a pretty solid team, you know, and I think you don't want to just throw a rookie out there until he dies. You know, hey, you're going to play until you screw it up. You know, that's kind of tough when you got a young kid, like as young as he is, and he just turned 20, I think. You know, so it's not like he's a baby, but, you know, the other option is a Abubakar basically. So with those two games, I think you might give Alvaro one of them and have a Abubakar have the other one and have AB play twice, you know, assuming that Oz Rigide will not be back yet, as we understand it. So other than that, you know, I legit clearly had a minute restriction last weekend at the 60 something minutes. So he probably can't play both 90. You might be able to start him in both if you sub him out. So look for that. You know, Kaik probably has to go twice since Ramiro probably wouldn't recover that fast. If Ramiro's out for the Wednesday, he probably is also out for Saturday. That's a tough turnaround. He's not going to heal that fast. Really, we should just keep an eye on. Otherwise, it's pretty self-explanatory. You know, it's Diego Costa, it's Anderson Julio, it's Petr Musa. You know, can Paxton come off the bench? That's a question. That's about it. I mean, there really is not a whole lot of, you know, the only real battle is Nolan versus Marco Farfan. It's the only battle I see in the team. Like, nobody else is up for competition. You know, not right now. Not with all the injuries.
I also think that this is a really critical junction of the season overall. Like, if this is going to be a make or break kind of playoff team, getting these two home wins based on the fact they've only won one home game all season is kind of a big deal at this point.
You got to start getting traction at home. If you can't start winning some home games, you're not going to be able to climb the standings like they think they're going to be able to do. You know, you can't rely on road wins to get you into the playoffs. You know, Dan, how are you feeling about these two games? Do you think you'll see some rotation here?
It's tough because, like you say, they've got a 4 weeks rest, or I guess 6 days rest before the July 4th game. But kind of crucially, it's three in a row at home. They're not having to travel. They've just come off the enforced week off. So yeah, I mean, it depends what the walk-in wounded looks like to me.
And it does pose those San Diegoans quite a test, because in their last 8 games, holy cow, they have won 6, tied 1, and lost 1. 6-1-1 in their last 8. How nice does that look?
Yeah. Well, we talked about this last time Dallas faced San Diego. Mike Rivera's going to coach, apparently. Dan and I know how odd that feels to say that based on like how everybody treated him here.
Well, I'll also point out that that streak started with the 5-0 win over Dallas.
Man, makes you feel good, doesn't it? Made them feel good. you know, you would say like that's obviously the game you need your best 11 for, but any home game, that's true. You always want to win your home games. So it's like you're going to roll out your best team you can for both of those games, I think. Like we said, with the break, I don't feel like there's a load of rotation that really needs to happen other than, you know, load management for Legette coming off his injury, you know, And if somebody else like a Ramiro comes back or something like that, load management of that guy too, because he's 1,000 years old. I don't really think that you can say one of these games is soft. I mean, it's like they're so desperate to win at home that you need to bring it for both of these games.
Well, San Jose also is coming in on a bit of a weird one, because in the same eight games, while they've only won three of them, they've only lost once. They've drawn four times. And this is the final game of a massive four-game road streak where they won in L.A., 1-0. They lost in St. Louis 2-1 and drew in Portland 1-1. And now they come to Dallas. So they've only lost once in their last eight. So Bruce Arena is bringing it to Toyota
Stadium. San Diego's 500 on the road. San Jose is one game. They're 3-4-2. So they're one game under 500 on the road. These are both two quality road teams. So you're really going to have to show up. I mean, these are not games where you can play kids, you know.
Boy, it would super stink if Dallas was to drop both of those games.
Yeah, I mean, these are the kinds of games that we've had this conversation a lot this year, I feel like. There's been a lot of games where you're like, you're going to find out what kind of team you really have. And over, we keep getting the same message. Like, it's just a middle-of-the-table team. Like, if you think you're better than that, these are two games that you should be able to win because they're at home, right? You know, if you think you're better than these teams, you need to win these games.
For sure.
But, I don't think that they are.
All right. We'll know a lot more about it when we do the podcast next week. Before we move on from all things Football Club Dallas, you got anything else, Dan, you want to chit-chat about?
No, I think the only thing that kind of caught my attention a little bit was just the Paxton Pomacol talk. That type of injury, that bone bruise. Same thing that you saw with George John a few years back, where it's like a player's eternally day to day. They'll get good days, bad days. Same as like back spasms, something like that. They may go a couple of days and can suddenly play. They may not. In George John's case, he never played for FC Dallas again. But hopefully with Paxton, it falls on the more positive side of that.
Well, as the president of the non-family fan club of one Paxton Pomacol, I am obviously rooting for the best of outcomes, but I also am prepared for the reality that the surgery that he had for the type of long-term wear and tear that he had was pretty high risk and wasn't for certain would work. And I'm just not 100% sold on the bone bruise claim. I mean, this new medical staff is so committed to the idea of kind of being vague and shady is not the right word, but kind of misdirecting in terms of communicating what injuries are, even internally within the club. So anyway, if it was just a guy that hadn't had an ongoing knee issue and a giant surgery, I'd probably be more likely to buy the bone bruise thing. But I'm just being a little too pessimistic. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm with you. Like the minute he played over 30 minutes, it came crashing down to earth with this, you know, issue. So like it could be a totally unrelated issue, but it's the kind of thing that makes me incredibly worried.
Yeah.
For the kid, you know, and we've known him, Peter, since he was 14. You probably know him longer than I have, since I'm 15, 18 years old, you know, and we obviously want the best for him as a, you know, a guy who has bled for this club for over a decade. So my fingers are crossed in every way possible, but I just am really worried about him.
Yep, for sure. All right, well, let's move on to some results around the Dallas-Fort Worth area with our other professional and semi-professional teams. North Texas had been on a good run, Buzz, but they fell to Vancouver 2.
Yeah, they're getting a little hurt personnel-wise because, you know, a couple of call-ups that have happened with some of the injuries. You know, Digger Garcia is up with the first team instead of down with them, and Alvaro's up instead of down with them, you know, and then they've also had some interesting choices. You know, I watch a kid, Ali Azura, play the best soccer he's played in a year and a half. A guy sort of struggled with injuries. He was amazing. And then the next game, he didn't even get off the bench. And I was like, man, he was amazing last game. How's that not getting rewarded? So I'm a little confused about some of the choices sometimes. It's unfortunate. Tarik Scott is definitely not, something's not working with that kid. He's not producing this year, you know, and seems to have lost confidence. Sam Sarver, of course, is going gangbusters and looks like a guy who could legitimately help FC Dallas if they needed him. You know, and maybe that'll happen by the end of the year. We'll see. But otherwise, like they've got you know, I think they had five high schoolers playing in the game the other day, you know, 17-year-olds basically starting, which is amazing. It really is. You know, there's only one kid over the age of 20. So it's a really young team. So they really struggle defensively sometimes to close games out and hold up a cohesive defensive effort. But they also went up against Jackson Castro, who is a solar kid, but went to Plano West and like leads the league in key passes. He's a phenomenal playmaker. I would have loved Dallas to grab him coming out of the draft, but his dad's a coach for solar, I believe, and is an ex-pro and stuff like that. But, you know, they put a double six formation in there. And I was like, man, how are you guys going to be able to keep the ball away from Jackson Castro at all? I mean, just tackle him all the time, I guess, but someone's got to be able to pass in there a little bit. So I was confused by that. You know, it's just, I think sometimes with all the mixed personnel, John Gall's looking for answers as much as anything because all the pieces are moving all the time. But that's the nature of North Texas SC. It's the nature of that side. So I enjoy watching it because of watching guys try and progress and get better or worse, as the case may be. You know, some guys that I was really hoping to see some progression out of, I'm not. And so I'm like, oof, that's worrying. You know, Momo Cisse, for example, looks like he's getting worse, not better, and that's not good.
Where they sit in the standings at this point?
I believe they're still second. I did not check that today, but, you know, the season is just halfway mark for them, as well as FC Dallas. So, like, you know, there's lots of time left to climb the standings. They've dropped a third after the loss. St. Louis has jumped them, but St. Louis is pretty good. You know, it's just, they're still at the top of the table. They still have a lot of talent. They're still winning games with a lot of kids, which is what you want. But at the same time, you know, it can be chaotic because of the personnel changes, because they're secondary to FC Dallas, which is as it should be, you know.
And I'll be darned, Texoma continues to go on a run. Their sixth straight positive result. They're 4-0-2 in their last six. And they got a 3-2 win over second place Charlotte Independence, which ironically is coached by former Dallas Burn manager Mike Jeffries, which I had no idea he was coaching the Charlotte Independence.
Yeah, he's kicked around MLS and USL for a bit, you know, so he's still working coach. That game was crazy. Saul Monsante scored with literally seconds left, and I think got hurt and injured himself. The other midfielder, Osmar Spengler, scored an absolute banger of a goal right before halftime, but a crazy goal. And really, I think you have to give credit, the most of the credit. Obviously, they've made some changes in the coaching as part of it, but they switched keepers like a month ago. And I'm pretty sure that the keeper they switched to is 4-0-1. And the keeper that was before was 0-3-2 or something like that. Like, you know, that one change has made a huge difference for them. Which is not to disparage the former keeper, but when you put a guy in and he proceeds to win, you know, get results in five straight with four of those wins, you know, that's a remarkable turnaround with one really dramatic change. He's not the only guy. They got a couple other guys in too, but that's pretty remarkable. That, I mean, he was the league player of the month of May, not keeper of the month, player of the month, you know, and they've continued to roll since through June, excuse me. So they're up to seventh now, which is two spots above the playoff line, and they're climbing the standings. I mean, Charlotte and Pence came in second place, and they beat them it's at home, of course, home field advantage, but they beat them. So that's pretty remarkable.
Well, that's quite a turnaround because the start was rather dire, but not unexpected for a brand new club. So,
And they had visa. Dan's talked about this a bunch. They've had some visa issues getting everybody in the country. Everybody is. It's not just them, but you know, it's just where we are.
Right.
So they had some trouble getting everybody into the town and playing because of that, you know.
And then Dallas Trinity announced another international game. Now, this time they're going to play it during the state fair, which is kind of interesting, on October the 18th of this year. Big Tex and Dallas Trinity will welcome in the women's team from Club America. And that, I'm sure that will be well attended as well. And that's a really good opportunity for them to win some new fans, too.
Yeah, that game was announced a while back, but the opponent wasn't. I believe we have not had a podcast since the opponent was announced.
I think that's right, yeah.
Club America, that's why I put it on the run sheet here. So I don't know anything about Club America. Femenil, is that how you say that? Mm-hmm. So, but, you know, that'll be a fun game down the Cotton Bowl. I was thinking about dragging my wife down to that. Enjoy the Cotton Bowl and the State Fair. It'll be fun.
I was going to say, I think that'll be kind of a good measuring stick for Trinity as well, because America just finished the fourth in the CONCACAF W Champions Cup. Lost to Portland Thorns in the third place game. Lost to Gotham in the semi-final. I think they got a win in the group stage against another NWSL team. So there's, you know, you've got a pretty clear, as clear a measuring stick against NWSL clubs as they're going to get without directly playing one.
Is Club America the one that has the women's team with the girl, the woman on it that hit that ridiculous goal this year that everybody was saying was going to win the Puskas Award? Yeah, the back heel. It was one of the two. Yeah. I can't remember. Like Jackie was her name or something. I remember talking about it on the radio show, but I don't. If she's on that team, that'd be worth going. Maybe she'll do it again for everybody.
You guys may be surprised to learn that the Dallas Trinity second season starts exactly 2 months from today, August 23rd.
That's ridiculous.
Which is crazy.
That is.
So like that, you know, if they do a usual six-month.
No, hold on. Wait a second.
Yeah.
It starts in 2 months?
August 23rd. They run a fall to spring season.
Okay. Did it start this early last year?
Mm-hmm. Pretty much.
Wow.
And if they do a 6 weeks camp, that means they're going to start camp in like 2 weeks.
That's crazy.
No, if they go 6 weeks, they may not, but that's what the teams that we're used to covering do 6 weeks. So we'll see whether they do six or not, but.
Be interested to see where Lexi Missimo is in her recovery.
You know, they said she'd be back for this season, but you're right. Does that mean opening day? Does it mean, you know, so she's pretty key. You know, they battled on without her, but you know, the whole thing's built around her. So they really need her back. And it'll be interesting to see. They have not made any player move announcements. So like, we're really waiting to see what they're going to do. And I think, you know, Dan and I will put our heads together and come up with some suggestions for them. Not that they would listen to us, but like we do with everybody, that nobody listens to us. So,
right.
But meanwhile, like it's just, I wanted to bring it up because it's like, I was talking to my wife about it and we were like, holy crap, is it really that far away, that close? It's like, yeah, it is. Yeah. Their opening game against Spokane Zephyr is on August 23rd, 7:30 p.m. at the Cotton Bowl.
Gee whiz.
I think they started August 18th last year. So,
yeah, this is, you know.
Time is flying by, guys.
Yeah, it is. Wait till you find out how old you are.
Right. Stop it.
Yeah.
Speaking of the Cotton Bowl, by the time people listen to this, the Atletico Dallas event at the Cotton Bowl take place. And what is this whole event for?
I believe it's a City of Dallas introducing the team and the stadium partnership. You know, like they had the city council meeting and then this is the follow on like press event, media event for, you know, people to come down, news stations to come down, do the interviews. The thing they sent me talks about, you know, individual interview availability, photo availability, you know, it's that kind of course it's at 10 a.m. on a Tuesday. So that means none of us will be there because we all have jobs, but you know, for the normal media, perhaps they'll be down there. And so you might see some Atletico Dallas stuff on the news by the time you're hearing this podcast. So
I will say I'm kind of impressed with how much they've just essentially embraced the concept of playing at the Cotton Bowl. They're going full tilt boogie on this deal. And all their like social media stuff and the imagery and everything they're doing. I mean, they're committed to doing this. And I mean, I know they kind of have to, but
imagine there's a deal in place for anything else. Like, I can't imagine that there's a deal in place for what's next. So like, they're going to have to be all in on this for a couple of years.
Easily. Oh, at least. Yeah. But my point is they don't have to, if they wanted to, they don't have to focus on the fact they're playing at the Cotton Bowl. Like I think they're trying to make a valid attempt in a marketing strategy to try to make the Cotton Bowl cool again, if that makes any sense.
Yeah. And an expression of their Dallasness, their investment in it. Yeah. We're the Dallas team, you know, with the way they have some of their merch just says Dallas on the front of it and that kind of thing. So, I mean, they're definitely running with that thing, and fair play to them because if they're actually playing in Dallas, they get the right to do that, in my opinion. So
it was the SMU playbook from a few years ago when they had all the SMU is Dallas's team and every neighborhood on different ad boards.
That was good stuff. It was a good campaign. I liked that Dallas merch that they had.
And I think it actually helped SMU's perception in the marketplace too.
Yep.
especially in areas that you probably wouldn't think would care about SMU. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. So City of Dallas. Yeah. I mean, that's
for sure.
Yeah.
Let's see. What else did we want to get into? Okay, so the Fort Worth USL situation continues to intrigue, my friends.
Yes.
So this, we talked about a bunch of stuff, but then this mysterious video popped up that somebody made us aware of that had, well, I'll let you explain it, Buzz. You explain it.
Yeah, somebody tweeted at me, a Third Degree account, a video that's a presentation from a women's football symposium. I believe the topic of this one was safety at women's stadiums and facilities. And the people that were, they were speaking at this particular video that was sent to me, were guys from a group that does stadium design and planning. And, the video at the time was public and it very quickly was made private after we shared a couple screen grabs from it. But the presentation is fascinating because they share about 20 minutes into the presentation, they get to Farrington Field as part of their presentation and the rebuild model that's there and the soccer aspect of it. And they don't name it that. I don't remember them naming that specifically, but the images clearly say Farrington Field right on top. And if you look at the images
on the roof,
at Farrington Field, and it clearly is Farrington Field. And the really important parts was they talked about that project. And the reason they brought it up was they specifically mentioned that the people that were involved, which I assume to be the city and or this team and the ISD, they wanted to keep the old stadium intact. So the old classic Farrington Field with the columns and that big, huge structure will remain. And if you've seen the images I tweeted, they're really modernizing and doing fancy stuff like on these end horseshoes to bring the whole thing into like a bowl. One end is more of like your hotel, a mixed use vibe. The other end's more of a seating, you know, and they talked about upgrades to the classic stands. And as you mentioned, Peter, specifically a roof on those classic stands, very importantly to me, no track. Cause by the time you make the surface big enough for football, professional football, you're going to eat up that area that was a track. Cause right now it's American football with the track. So all fascinating to see. And the fact that they instantly made it private, just verified that it's legit, you know, cause they could easily just, someone could have said, no, that's not real or whatever. For them to hide it means it's real. So
yeah.
Fascinating stuff. I mean, we've learned a lot in the last couple of weeks just by accidental leaks of their URL coming out and mentioning a women's team, which we weren't really 100% sure of and aware of, and we're able to talk about now. And these pictures of the stadium lending us to the credence to this idea of this rumor that we had heard that Farrington was likely going to be the place. Apparently, it is the place. So, a smashing venue. The pictures are fantastic. It's a great sight line right to downtown from the main home stand. I mean, it looks fantastic. So, you know, they didn't talk about it long, just a couple of minutes in their larger presentation, but it was really nice.
Yeah. I think it'd be really interesting since both those teams, Dallas and Fort Worth, are going to likely start up in 27, which would still be USLC.
Yeah. We'll see with that then. They haven't made any announcements at all. So we don't really know much about any, that would all be pure speculation on our part. Yeah. When they're going to start playing. You would think that maybe they could go women's sooner and maybe they would hold off for the Super League thing. Cause they not really have, they haven't verbalized a commitment to the USL championship like Athletico Dallas has, but you know, this is all pure speculation on our part at this point, other than we've learned that it's real and it's happening. And then, you know, and that there's a men and women's team both. So
I got a question, a branding question.
Yeah.
So we all love the concept of them announcing they're calling the club Panther City, soccer club, football club, whatever, Panther City. But
I mean, they just mentioned that in the thing.
Yeah, they just said bringing soccer to the Panther City.
Okay. Yes. But what I'm saying is we love the idea of them actually calling it that.
Yeah.
Is that the right and smart name for a brand new soccer league? All that stuff like Panther City. I gotta be honest. I didn't even know Panther City was a thing until like,
oh, you didn't
10
oh.
years ago.
Oh, 10 years ago. Yeah. Yeah. It's been a thing for a long time, but no, it's not the right decision. We love it, but that's a bad decision. You know, when you have a new league and you want to call it Fort Worth something, you want to, I mean, everyone in Fort Worth loves the Panther City, but no one outside of Fort Worth is going to care. You know, like if you were in a market that had multiple teams and, you know, there already was a Fort Worth FC or something, then you would, then maybe you would do that and you'd be fine and happy with it. But in terms of launching a USL Premier League, you know, whatever it's going to be, like, I think it's a bad idea. Fort Worth Panthers, maybe you could buy that.
Well, but I think one important thing there is, you know, look at Atletico Dallas. There is a lot of emphasis on trying to get a connection to the city, on trying to get a connection to the Spanish language audience.
Yeah.
There, to my knowledge, and well, I guess the Fort Worth Cats, but there's certainly not a professional sports team of any variety that currently has the name Fort Worth. So an instant way you can kind of, they're not professional.
Oh, fair.
So, you know, an instant way that you can kind of build that affinity in the city is to, you know, is to be the only pro team in town that has that name. But then, you know, you always risk the possibility of having like an FC or a City or a United or whatever. Atletico obviously went with that very individual route, which also kind of targeted the Spanish language audience. So it's probably more delicate in Fort Worth than Dallas to a degree.
Yeah, I'm really, now that I start thinking about this, if you really want to connect to the community, and again, I'm not from Fort Worth, and I don't really know how big of a deal Panther City is to people of Fort Worth. I'm going to guess it's kind of a thing that they really love and dig and connect with. So naming it Panther City would make a lot of sense to build that community and that connection with the community. But I also agree with Dan that calling it Fort Worth and being the only professional team with Fort Worth in your name has a lot of value. Because here's the thing, Buzz. I'm not sure calling yourself Fort Worth holds any more value or importance outside of Dallas-Fort Worth than Panther City does to the rest of the country. Like, people, how many people
heard of Fort Worth?
Well, okay.
Even if it's just from Dallas-Fort Worth.
Oh, yeah, see, I'm going to guess if you had to ask any random person from L.A., Detroit, Chicago, or New York to point to show us where Fort Worth, Texas is on a map, I think we'd all be shocked to find out what low a percentage of people could do that.
That's fun.
Yeah, maybe. But there's also a city politics angle. Like, they're going to help you invest in this stadium, like, you better call it Fort Worth.
Yeah, that's fair. That's a really good shout. Yeah.
And you could easily be, you know, Fort Worth Panther FC, or you could make Panther City FC like a tagline. You could just be Fort Worth FC and then put, you know, Panther City FC on the back or Panther City or whatever you want to do. There's a million ways to market and spend that as a secondary or a tag or a nickname, you know, even just calling the Fort Worth Panthers.
Could we?
You know?
Yeah, I was just going to say, could we go old school American sports naming nomenclature, just call it Fort Worth Panthers and leave it at that and leave the stupid FCSC ding dong crap that I still am upset with Lamar Hunt over off, please?
Yeah, easily so. Yeah, for sure. Just Fort Worth Panthers would work.
God, what a Pandora's box that man opened.
He really did, because everybody since then has gone with the FC thing pretty much. God. Except for one or two, or an SC. Like, when was the last time we had a team named something not FC or SC?
It's like the soccer version of the Wuhan virus. It just took over everything.
I mean, even clubs that have other names now will still tag the FC on there. You know, like Tampa Bay Sun of the Super League, they're actually Tampa Bay Sun FC. That's a hugely unwieldy name. It's just too much.
Too much. All right. Well, I guess we'll keep So do we, by the way, website link that has mysteriously disappeared, YouTube videos that are now been made private. Do we have any idea when we're going to find out anything about this Fort Worth entity, boys and girls? Men and women's team. I'm so sorry. I'm still working.
No, you're getting there.
Okay.
Yeah, you caught yourself.
All right.
Well, that's the thing is, like, I've said before, and I know you guys know this too, that, like, we had heard enough stuff even before the URL or the stadium video to know that this thing was happening.
Yeah.
It's I have no idea. Like, I would have thought for sure you would have heard something by now. So they must be waiting for something. Maybe they're letting Atletico get all the air out of the room, so they can then come in a little bit later with, like, a, you know, and not fight them so much for brand new team, you know, authenticity and stuff. Like, give them some space to then come out later, like end of year or next year, even, you know.
I think in all honesty, if I were them, I'd probably sit on it just to see if Atletico announced too soon.
Yeah.
Because
it's
kind of hard to hold, you know, interest with, yeah, we're not going to play for another 2 years, but, you know, here's some stuff.
That's a very good point. You know, like if they're not playing, like if they were playing in a month and a half, you'd be like, come on. But, you know, obviously they're not playing this season in USL Super League, you know, and if they really are going for Premier and not Championship, maybe they're going to sit on it for a year or two, you know, for all we know. We just know that these things are progressing at some level behind the scenes. So we keep waiting for it to happen.
All right. So I told everybody I would, I wanted to throw out a theory. And this is tied to a tweet, Buzz, that you shared. I don't know if you did it publicly or you just did it in the group chat, from Alan Reed. Now, Alan Reed is
group chat.
Is formerly the guy that ran all of the ground, head groundskeeper, I guess is the official term, for FC Dallas, and left a month or so ago to take over field operations for the Dallas Cowboys. And we all kind of looked at each other and went, well, it's not like Dallas has a lot of grass fields they got to manage. And sure enough, today he puts out a tweet announcing his start at the Cowboys and overseeing the practice fields at the Star in Frisco. Now, I was just, by pure coincidence, I had dinner at the Star at the Cowboys Club a couple weeks ago, and I can officially announce that they still only have one grass practice field at the Star. And so, the obvious answer is, okay, what's going on with Alan? Is this a more prestigious job? Less pressure, more money, a combination of all those things. Why would you do this? And that's obviously would be a completely reasonable and fair answer. The Cowboys are obviously a hundredfold a bigger deal than FC Dallas, and I'm sure the prestige of being their grounds maintenance guy is a big deal. But after going to the AT&T Stadium, the Death Star, to see that really boring game we watched last night, Buzz, the grass field was down again. And Dan, I know some of this. I've got a friend who is actually on one of the crews that does some of the installation of this stuff. And the field installation this year for the Gold Cup was very different from the year prior. So don't forget, last year during the Copa America, they did this massive installation with an irrigation system, a foot worth of topsoil before they put grass down on it, blah, 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 blah. Well, this year, they did the decking on top of the concrete, but then they put, instead of 2-inch sod, they put 4-inch sod down, and they hand watered it and ran UV lights on rollers over it. And I got to say, when we went in there last night and they had already played 2 games on it, I thought the surface looked fantastic and played fantastic. I don't know how any of the players or coaches felt about it, but this, you know, with the big installation of the grass field for the World Cup coming next year, which is going to require them to do some over coverage of the ground suites in the corners to give them all the footage and square footage they need for the proper size World Cup field. I just wonder, with all the NFLPA stuff going on about grass fields and this, that, and the other, I just wonder if what we're going to find out is after the World Cup that they have figured out a way to install grass inside a dome stadium like this and replace parts and pieces of it if need be. And part of Alan Reed's move is that he's part of that project to put grass in AT&T full time. Just a theory.
That'd be amazing.
Yeah.
I know they have multiple versions of the turf that they roll in and out of there, whether it's a Cowboys game or a college game or a high school game or a soccer field.
Yeah.
And I've watched them do that turnover. It's amazing how fast it happens. You know, maybe he's involved in a greater level of complex management or something, you know, but maybe you're right. That's a fascinating idea. I would love to see, I've always preferred grass for all my sports. I would love to see the Cowboys play on grass, but I don't know if that's a Jerryism that might not happen.
I mean, I can imagine taking a higher profile job and going from like literally 47 fields to one grass field all seems like very smart career move on Alan's part. But I just
one field.
Something about this just seems that this is a big, there's more to this than meets the eye. And with the Bernabeu and Tottenham Stadium, both of those retractable grass fields, that essentially go underneath the stadium and live in a grow light environment and are retracted and put back out mechanically on essentially long stretches of panels. Well, why couldn't you do that manually at AT&T Stadium? I mean, the only difference we're talking about is how you maneuver those panels. Instead of a robot doing it, why can't humans move grass panels in and out of the stadium as need be?
No, that would be it. Just like where you put them, like in between, like yeah. If you weren't using them, you know,
I don't know.
You'd have to have some, you'd have to eat up one of your parking lots or something to have a grow area or. Yeah, it's a fascinating question. Obviously, we don't have any answers to it, but I think you raise a fun theory.
Okay.
I should ask Alan.
All right. Anything else, boys? Under an hour. Look at us here.
Yeah. The Academy season has ended. So now coming up next, I'll do
FC Dallas won all the trophies, I assume?
Nope. They didn't win any.
Is this the first time they've not won at least one age group?
No.
Oh.
No, they've not won a championship in a long time. I think the last one they won might be the year after they won two at the same day. Like the year after that, I think they won one. I think that might have been it. So like that probably would have been like, you know, when Paxton was like 18, maybe. That might have been awesome.
When Paxton had two good knees.
Yeah, that was a long time ago. I mean, that was like 6-7 years ago, maybe, since they've won one. You know, I think like if you went back and counted the amount of actual youth championships Dallas has won, FC Dallas has won in his academy, it's probably less than 5.
Really?
Yeah. Okay. There's a lot of teams in the United States, and these divisions are crazy. There was this golden era before all the other MLS teams sort of woke up, where, you know, under Lucci and Oscar, where they happened to win 2-1 day. You know, and they won one the year before. I think they won one, maybe not the year after, but the year after that, something like that. And that's really about it. So, like, you know, it's not like Dallas has won a billion youth championships all the time. It's like that's a bit of a misnomer. You know, like people talked about the LA Galaxy, I think, won back to back, and everyone was like, "Oh my God, it's crazy. We haven't seen this since Dallas Burn did it." Obviously, Dallas did it. You know, basically, so. You know, they won that one particular age group, won like this the 16 and then the set, or the 17 and the 18 back to back, and also won with the 16 one time. It's all three. That was basically the why people talk about that FC Dallas that way. It doesn't happen anywhere near as much as people think.
Well, I know this episode is short, but trust me, with two games coming up, the next one will make up for that shortcoming. So don't despair, dear curious.
Oh, by the way, I got derailed. What I was trying to tell you there was that I'm going to do my Academy signings list for the summer, okay, the next week or two. So,
and for those who listen to the pod that care about the idea of Wiggle Butt Soccer Club, the products are now up on the interweb for purchase. There are t-shirts, a couple hats, coffee mug, both a full color version of the logo and a vector version of the logo, and a whole bunch of backstory. I spent a lot of time writing up and wasting a tremendous amount of time on. I've tried to set the prices as low as I can. And for those who listen to the pod, we have a promo code of up the butts, which will get you 10% off. So go get you some wiggle butt goods and let me know what you think. And everybody that gets an order also gets a very special surprise.
Oh,
if you've ever ordered anything from the Kick Around, you know what the surprise is. But if you order something from the store, you'll get a surprise. So there you go.
Surprising.
Clearly a rousing success, and everybody's excited for me.
Well,
so
I don't know what you want me to say about it. I said, yeah, that's great.
Wow, Pete, those shirts really do look cool. I can't wait to get one myself. We should just had one in brown.
I like the flat logo better than the fancy logo. How about that? Like I do with Atletico.
Yeah, see, I think I like the vector logo too, but a lot of people love the full color logo. So we'll see. We'll see what sells. There's both of them up there.
I like the animated GIF of the fighting corgis. That's fun.
Yes, that is pretty hilarious. The snarling corgis. Okay. Well, anything, Dan? You got anything else? All talked out.
No. I think the only thing I was going to mention was the Gold Cup attendances in the week. Obviously,
oh, yes.
A little bit down in line with everything else.
There was actually more people there for the U.S. game than I anticipated, although it still felt very sparse. What was the announced number, by the way, Dan?
20,918, I think.
Man, that did not look like 20,000 people at all.
It's a big stadium.
It is. But I remember when they used to say 20,000 people at the Cotton Bowl when it was 75,000, and you were like, okay, there's no way there's 20,000 people.
Well, I mean, that's still a win compared to the first two games, which combined for 24,000.
Oh, it was a combined attendance of the two games last night at 20,000.
Well, no, that's how all the doubleheaders work. But
okay.
I mean, like, so the other two U.S. games were 12,610 in San Jose and 11,727 in Austin.
I see. Okay.
Austin's not a soccer town.
Yeah, I was really kind of surprised by that turnout in Austin, but the prices are ridiculous and all that stuff. Yeah.
Well, they're doing the dynamic pricing because
dynamic pricing that if the demand is low, the price goes down?
Yeah, it's just it's not reacting that way. Because they have a very limited amount of parking passes, so I ended up having to buy parking, which is fucking expensive. And the cheapest ticket at that time was still $68 for, you know, they only opened two of the five tiers at AT&T Stadium, and those weren't full.
Well, and I'm sad to report that the U.S. men's national team, at least in this iteration, is even more frustrating to watch in person than they are on TV.
Well, yeah, that was a rough game.
And just carrying on with the attendance thing, quickly. Mexico on Wednesday also struggled. They got 34,000, which was to date the second highest attendance in the Gold Cup so far. But they averaged 67,000 at AT&T Stadium.
Yeah, that's a low. That's a poor turnout for them.
It's actually the second worst attendance they've had in that stadium.
Too much soccer. I can't believe I'm actually saying this.
You're buying my theory.
Just too much soccer, man.
It's oversaturation, man.
Yes, for sure. All right. Well, speaking of that, no more soccer talking. Thank you, Dan.
Thank you.
Thank you, Buzz.
Yeah, up the butts.
Up the butt. That's it. That's the kind of reaction I need from my friends, my supporters. Come on, Dan, say it for me. Come on. In your full British lilt.
Up the butts.
Third Degree, the podcast, is brought to you by Wigglebutt Soccer Club. That's right. For over 100 years, Wigglebutt SC has brought you the same brand of chaotic and joyful soccer, exemplified by 11 corgis kicking a ball around on a pitch. Wigglebutt SC, for all your merchandise needs, check out the Kick Around shop at Fourth Wall. Get yourself some Wigglebutt SC swag. Wigglebutt SC, the friendliest club in the world.
And thank you, DFW soccer curious person you. We will speak to you next week with a whole bunch more to talk about. In fact, two FC Dallas games on the next episode of Third Degree, the podcast.
So much butt stuff.
Third Degree, the Third Degree Net Podcast. Third Degree, the Third Degree Net Podcast. Third Degree, the Third Degree Net Podcast. Third Degree, the Third Degree Net Podcast.